Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you. Another good week for the Milwaukee Brewers. They win 4 of 7 games. They struggled big time on Sunday, but that was not the lead from the Dodgers series, the 4-game Dodgers series at American Family Field over the weekend. The Brewers win 3 games, all of them exciting, one of them particularly exciting on Saturday night. We'll talk about it here. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, and on the other line is Todd Rosiak. He's Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Todd, I know you were at American Family Field this weekend for some of this action. I'm still, even after Sunday's game, which I think we kind of probably saw coming, there was going to be a market correction. You know, their bullpen was worn out, their lineup was a little unusual, but I'm still trying to wrap my mind around that Saturday game. The Brewers winning the first 3 games of that series against the Dodgers, improved to 17-10 after the first day of May. I don't know how that's possible. Everybody is injured. They have 16 guys on the injured list, and yet here they are beating what is supposed to be one of the best teams maybe ever. I mean, what really strikes you from this series? That obviously you've got the Travis Shaw walk-off, which was very fun, but that game in particular, the way the bullpen pitched with Josh Hader at the back end, the way that you got clutch moments from a whole bunch of guys, what really sticks out to you as you look back on this Dodgers series?
Well, you hit a lot of the high points right there. To me, it's just, you know, what you had said previously regarding the roster and just, you know, so many injuries, so many moving parts, an improbable 3 out of 4 in this series. I don't think anybody with going into this series with the way the Brewers have been decimated and then kept losing guys during the series could have expected them to play as competitively as they did. But again, it was the pitching that kept them in every game except for Sunday today. And, you know, just enough offense. And I think I picked the right day to be off, which was yesterday, Saturday. So I didn't have to work the game, but I was able to catch it on TV, and I have to give myself a pat on the back. Tim O'Driscoll and I were texting in the 11th inning, and he was saying that he was off too. So we were both saying good thing that we weren't working that game. And I said, mark it down, Timmy, the Brewers are going to win. And he scoffed at me. So I had my last laugh after the winning run crossed the plate in the form of Mario Feliciano. But yeah, I mean, a lot of cool storylines. You had Josh Hader, you know, pitching all three of those first 3 games, only the second time in his career he's pitched 3 in a row. You know, even though he was forgotten the way the game turned out on Saturday night, you know, Brandon Woodruff with another solid 6 innings. He's just been a machine since opening day. Brewers getting just enough offense. You've got Luke Maley all of a sudden stepping into the void and, you know, picking up the slack when Omar Narvaez went down. Feliciano scoring that, drawing the walk in the 11th and scoring the winning run. It was just a ton of cool things happening. And then, you know, Sunday, of course, Alec Bettinger, there's lots to talk about there too. You feel really bad for the young man. You know, at least he did stay in there and absorb the beating as the Brewers needed him to do. So, yeah, a lot of cool things, a lot of interesting things. But bottom line, winning 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers and 6 out of 7 from the 2 best teams in the NL, and the Dodgers and the Padres, if you believe the prognosticators, that's not bad for a team that has not been 100% since the first week of the season.
I told Tom last week, I thought there was a reckoning coming with the offense. They had found a way, despite having one of the bottom 5 offenses in baseball by a lot of metrics. It's improved a little bit, but still, this is, you know, not an offensive powerhouse. They just seem to get hits at the right moments. I mean, they've just been clutch, for lack of a better word or a better concept. But this team is going to be a lot better when Christian Yelich finally comes back, when Lorenzo Cain comes back. Certainly now with Narvaez going on the injured list, that's another big bat that they're going to need back at some point. But I know you don't know when Christian Yelich is coming back or when Lorenzo Cain is coming back. It seems like it'll be soon, but we've thought that now for a few days. I mean, do you have any concept, any behind the scenes or between the lines possible thoughts on when those guys might be back and when this offense is going to be a little bit closer to full strength?
Yeah, we got better, kind of insight from both Craig Counsell and David Stearns over the last couple of days. And it's not going to be long. I mean, it would not surprise me to see at least one of them activated tomorrow as the series opens in Philadelphia, and would not surprise me if both of them were reinstated by the second or at very least the third game. So it's coming quick. Christian Yelich, watched him in pregame today, running, taking batting practice, taking fly balls. He looks like he's pretty well ready to go. I mean, days earlier, even last week, I remember seeing Kane running the bases and stuff, and he seemed like he was, you know, rounding into form too. So, you know, obviously any kind of reinforcements, especially guys who are, you know, the quality caliber of players that those two are, is going to be a big boost to the Brewers offensively, defensively, and just, you know, all around clubhouse presence, the whole deal. So should be coming quickly. And then you have the whole question of roster moves to get those guys on. It's just every day, seemingly for a long period of time here, we've had roster moves, multiple roster moves. As reporters, we love it because it's always something to talk about and write about. But, you know, we're obviously in a different place than the management that has to make these decisions, because it affects the lives of guys who are trying to stay on the team. So we'll see how that all shakes out.
Just a crazy number of roster moves, like you said, and some of the stories are really good. Jordan Zimmermann telling his agent he was ready to retire, actually drove up to Eagle River, and then 2 hours later got a call from the Brewers saying they needed him in this series. So he made his Brewers debut on Sunday. You had Mario Feliciano with a massive catching shortage. They had to add Feliciano for the game Saturday. He winds up just a young 22 years old. He gets in there and he walks in extra innings and winds up scoring the winning run, like you mentioned. Jacob Nottingham was property of the Seattle Mariners for a second, and then they designated him for assignment after the Brewers had. They get him back for cash exchange, and he winds up hitting two home runs on Sunday. I'll talk more about the catching position here in a minute, but referring to roster moves that might get made if Yelich and Kane come back, one of the obvious ones probably, especially with the minor league system starting up on Tuesday, would be Keston Hira getting some at-bats down in the minor leagues. He has really struggled this year, really struggled all around. I mean, he's learning a new position, just not hitting balls that are right in the middle of the zone. You look at some of that StatCast deep dive, he's just whiffing on a lot of pitches right there on a tee, and that seems to be something that he struggled with now all this year and last year. Am I wrong about that? It seems like kind of an obvious setup at this point, with him not playing much in the Dodger series, that they are going to give him some opportunities in the minor leagues and just give him a break. Is that, am I overthinking it, or is that what you see as well?
No, I think that's a definite possibility. The likelihood of that, I think, is very high. And I was thinking during the game today, you know, if you would have said a month ago that Mario Feliciano would be making his major league debut in late April, or sorry, May 1st, and Keston Hira would be getting sent down to the minors shortly thereafter, I mean, your head would have exploded. But that's where we are.
It still might explode.
Yeah, I don't know. That's where we are at this point. It's crazy. But, you know, as good a hitter as Hira is, he's just obviously in a bad place and can't get out of his own way at the plate at this point. So you send him down, get his confidence back, get regular at-bats, you know, work on whatever mechanical stuff he might need to work on. And I wouldn't, you know, assuming that he's able to get it going, I wouldn't assume this would be a long-term demotion by any means. But they need the Keston Hira back from 2019, the guy who was consistently driving the ball, like Craig Counsell says, doing damage in the middle of the lineup. And, you know, so at that point, let's say 3 weeks from now, he's going well. You know, you've got Christian Yelich back, you've got Lorenzo Cain back, you know, you bring up Keston Hira and all of a sudden he's contributing. Hopefully by that point, Omar Narvaez is okay and he's back to swinging the way he was. Becomes a very formidable lineup again. It's something that I don't think anybody expected. I'm sure least of all Keston Hira, but it's a funny game, you know, and it humbles the best of them. And he's certainly one of them.
Going back now to the catching situation, I'm curious what the long term is with both Feliciano and Jacob Nottingham. Feliciano only got that really only a spot opportunity because the Brewers were desperate with both Narvaez and Pena on the injured list. You had Luke Maley. Fortunately for them, they had at least him as part of the taxi squad, but they needed a backup catcher, and that's where Feliciano came in. Still a guy who I think is thought of, I would think the Brewers think of him as a guy who's going to be in the minors probably all season. But I guess I don't know if he's the type of guy that could come back at some point this season if needed. And then Nottingham is interesting. He, you know, they DFA'd him. They didn't have room for him. He's out of options. They know now that he'd be claimed if they did that again, because Seattle did it. And it's possible he's a guy who could play some first base up in a platoon with Dan Vogelbach if you really wanted to try to hide him somewhere on the roster. I don't know if they would quite have room for that, but what do you think the long term is for both of those guys? What do you kind of foresee for these two?
You know, Nottingham, I think in the short term, he's obviously going to be the backup, and you know, he at least keeps the Brewers in a decent spot. You know, backup, a guy who's familiar with the pitching staff already. As you saw Sunday, he's got a little bit of slug to him, you know, hitting two homers for the first time in his career. That was a pretty cool way to come back after landing in Milwaukee at 1 a.m. from Seattle. You know, what happens once Pena comes back? That's the question. You know, maybe at that point you keep Pena as your starter, you hang on to Nottingham, and you send Maley down. I think that's probably the way they would go, because Maley has options left, and or at least one option left, I believe. And he even said so much on Friday when he filled in for Narvaez when he got hurt. He said, you know, truth be told, I was expecting to sign with the Brewers and begin the season at Nashville in AAA and just play regularly, since he hasn't played regularly since 2019. He missed all 2 months last year with after finger surgery when he was with the Pirates. So, you know, Nottingham, that way they hang on to him. Once Narvaez comes back, then you have a decision to make. But as far as Feliciano goes, I would think that he's, you know, he's ticketed for Nashville. He would probably be there most, if not all, season, and just honing his catching skills. I think, you know, offensively, he's a guy that they believe is going to be an impact bat, and he certainly showed that in 2019 in Carolina. You know, he's got to continue to get better with the glove, calling games, just all those things that you need to do in the minor leagues as a catcher. I remember Stephen Vogt telling me one time that the 2018-2019 era when he was on the team, saying that it really does not matter what a catcher hits in the minors. It's just all about reps behind the plate, learning pitchers, learning how to call games, working with umps, all that stuff. That's the most important thing, and eventually the offense will come for most guys. So, you know, he's only 22 years old. He's got a bright future ahead of him, and I don't think there's any question that Mario Feliciano is the catcher of the future for this team. And interesting, you know, to look back several years ago, everyone thought Jacob Nottingham was that guy when they traded Chris Davis for him back in 2016. So sometimes things don't work out as planned, but the Brewers look like they have a nice plan B in place in Feliciano, who could be really, really good in time.
This July, when MLB takes its All-Star break, a different league that you can be a part of will just be getting started. Introducing Milwaukee Sports and Social, a brand new recreational, co-ed softball and kickball league for the city of Milwaukee that is designed to help you and your friends make the most out of summer 2021. Register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals that you can have a great summer with. Registration is only $99 per person, but listeners can take $5 off their registration with code BASEBALL at checkout. Again, that is code BASEBALL at checkout. Start enjoying your social life again. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. I'm sure Luke Maley isn't the only guy who thought he would be spending most of the year at Nashville. Pretty much the entire 40-man roster now has been used. This was a week where Brewers fans got to know a couple new pitchers as well. So curious what little scouting report you might have on guys like Alec Bettinger, who we saw on Sunday, who, I mean, he was in a tough spot against an amazing lineup. 5 runs in the first after a really close play at first base, and then he was kind of left out there. Brewers were fortunate to only need to use 3 pitchers on Sunday, so everybody is still fresh and healthy for the start of that 4-game series in Philadelphia on Monday. And one of those other guys, Patrick Weigel, he was part of the deal with the Atlanta Braves that sent Orlando Arcia elsewhere. He and another pitcher by the name of Chad Sabatka started at the alternate training start site. We've seen Weigel now twice. He went down and came right back with the Brewers injury situation. What have you seen from him? Any impressions of him? And same with Bettinger. What do you think his long-term prognosis is with this team?
I think Bettinger, you know, everybody that, you know, most fans are, you know, what have you done for me lately? But I think the reasonable ones understand that it was really extenuating circumstances for him starting this game today. And, you know, having only pitched one season at Double A, little over his skis, but at the same time, if he steps on first base, he gets that out in the first inning. Maybe the day turns out totally different. Who knows? But you know, it was pretty clear that things got pretty fast for him right from the start, and just was not able to slow it down. But you know, when he's going well, he's a guy who is going to throw his fastball between 92 and 94. He also throws a slider and a curveball. He's a control guy. You know, he's got to command the strike zone, and you know, I believe he's averaged over his minor league career a little over, you know, 2.4, 2.5 walks per nine innings, which is really good, but not a huge strikeout guy either. So obviously he's got to put the ball where he wants it to succeed, and that just was not the case today. But, you know, historically bad first outing, does that rule him out in the future? Absolutely not. You know, I'm sure that he said so much in the post game that, you know, he's had his butt kicked in baseball before and he's bounced back. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to bounce back from this. And he's just part of that next wave of starting pitching in the Brewers organization. So I'm sure we'll see him again at some point. And then Weigel, you know, interesting arm. You know, he definitely has some potential. He's a big guy. You know, that's the first thing that hits you when you look at him. He's a big dude. One of the first guys you want off the bus to intimidate people, if nothing else, or, you know, bench clearing brawl or something like that. I'm sure he'd come in handy. But, you know, he was hitting 96 today on the radar gun. And I think it's probably a case for him of, you know, just more pitching. You know, he's got to get more experience and eventually maybe he finds a foothold in the majors. So at this point, you know, you mentioned Chad Sabatka too. He's one of only two guys on the 40-man roster that has not seen action yet this year in just over a month, which is mind-blowing. And I would expect we'll see him at some point here soon, just, you know, as another fresh arm. The other guy is Dylan File, who, of course, is still recovering from elbow surgery, and he'll be out for a while yet. But, yes, just two young, promising arms that we will definitely hear from again in the future, I would think.
Dylan File promoted to the big league club briefly so they could put him on the 60-day DL because they just need as much roster space as they can possibly create on the 40-man with all the various moves that have had to be made over the last, you know, 4 weeks. It's been wild. One guy who went on the DL and came back is Colton Wong, and you know, especially with Keston Hiura struggling, it looks pretty genius that the Brewers went out and got themselves a veteran second baseman. Wong obviously did miss some time with that injury, but he's been everything I think they could have hoped for. He's been solid at the top of the order. Probably his offensive numbers aren't quite where he'd like them to be, but he just missed a huge home run on Saturday night, turned into a sacrifice fly against the Dodgers. I believe that would have been a grand slam, but defensively is where he's really stood out. And that's, he made a circus double play early in the week. I believe that was against, actually don't remember if that was a Florida game or a Dodgers game. I think that was against the Marlins, but, it's just having that veteran presence seems to be so huge for the Brewers, and probably one of the reasons you could say their pitching has been as good as it is having that reliable guy up the middle. As you've watched Colton Wong, is that kind of exactly what you would have envisioned, or is there more you could see from him, or is this just, I don't know, how do you see Colton so far this season?
Just the consummate professional, I think, is how I would describe him. The guy checks all the boxes. You know, defensively, obviously a star, you know, two gold gloves. I think he's tailor-made for American Family Field with that left-handed swing. You know, it would not surprise me to see him finish with 15 homers or more this year. Leadership, just tailor-made leadoff hitter. You know, a guy is just a pesky at bat, doesn't strike out much, gets on base by hook or by crook, and steal a base if need be, smart. He just does everything. I think he's a clubhouse, you know, I can't judge since we're not in the clubhouse anymore at this point with the pandemic, but strikes me as a clubhouse leader. You know, we've had guys talk about, especially Tyrone Taylor the other night after his big game, he mentioned Colton Wong specifically as a guy who has really worked with him on his swing, how to take batting practice, and just doing the little things, I think, trying to teach the younger guys how to be pros too. So, as far as the money spent, I think an absolute bonus to this point, picking up Colton Wong and just everything the lineup needed and everything the franchise needed, and money well spent there, in my opinion.
A little bit of a big picture question. Curious your take on this. There were some adventures in umpiring this week. One of them, a play up the first baseline where Zach Godley was called for interference after fielding the ball and shoveling it to first base against the Miami Marlins. Asan Diaz was given first base and ended up leading to a run in a game that the Brewers lost. That was an interesting call. I think we could go in circles trying to discuss that one. I think it just comes down to a judgment call by that first base umpire, Marty Foster. But then another play on Saturday that was interesting, a replay call against Colton Wong. He was caught stealing, ruled to be caught stealing. Replay seemed to show pretty clearly that he was safe. That's not what the officials ultimately ruled, and he was out. Lots of booing at American Family Field. But I'm just curious about your thoughts on replay, because I was a huge proponent of it. Huge. And I love the idea of just getting those obvious calls right if they're called wrong in the moment. And I thought I couldn't understand why anybody would be against it when the replay system started to get hashed out in baseball. I've completely gone 180 on it. I think it only gets the calls right not enough of the time. Maybe it's 70% of the time, 65-70% of the time, but not enough in my mind anymore to justify the time it takes to get those replays in. Slows down the game. It's frustrating when you see what seems to be a pretty obvious call on replay and officials say there's just not enough evidence to overturn it. A lot going on with replay, but where do you fall on it? Do you feel like there's ever a chance we could see a reduction of replay in baseball? And second of all, how do you personally feel about it?
Well, this is the podcast where you need Tom. I mean, Tom.
Yes, Tom has very strong opinions.
Yeah, and I pretty much side with him on all that stuff. I think he's right. You know, it's just there's no accountability. There's no transparency. You know, you've got active umps who are acting as replay guys who, you know, you just can't believe that they're not going to not side on fall on the side of their comrades, their colleagues on close calls. It takes too long. A lot of times it doesn't get the call right many times, even though we, you know, like you mentioned, we're seeing the same things that they are, you would think. And for whatever reason, it just doesn't go that way. It's something that I think is going to continue to be tweaked. And I think it definitely needs to be tweaked. And baseball has shown that, you know, with all the rules changes and the different experimental things that they've been doing, that they're definitely open to that, which is good. But right now, I just feel like it's broken and it's not really adding much. So it's just one of those things where I think the intent is correct, but the way they're implementing it and the way it's working is just not good. And it's just creating more ill will, more animosity. It's turning more fans off. I think when you have clear-cut cases like the two that we saw with involving the Brewers earlier this week, you know, it infuriates managers, it infuriates players, makes the relationship sometimes a little bit more adversarial between players, managers, and umpires. It's just not good. So I think it needs to be reexamined. It needs to be reworked. I think Tom had a good proposal of replacing the replay officials with impartial non-umpires. I mean, obviously guys that know the game and are well-versed in the rules and all that, but are not actually umpires. So you're going to get truly impartial calls, you would think. So different ways to look at it, different ways to go about it, but I don't think there's any question that there needs to be improvements and tweaks made to make it truly effective.
It does seem like transparency around umpiring in general would seemingly benefit the overall, you know, feelings around it. Now, maybe from the umpiring point of view, all it would serve is to create greater animosity. I don't know. But, you know, sometimes it feels like they can make a decision that seems baffling and you don't get an answer as to why or what the consequences would be if it was incorrectly adjudicated or whatever. So,
and not to cut you off, but like, here's two examples. Tom and I talked about this after that game on Wednesday. So early in the season, everybody remembers the Mets and the Marlins where Conforto got supposedly hit, all that stuff. You know, the ump made the incorrect call and then he came out later and said, okay, I might've screwed it up. you know, even though it doesn't affect the outcome of the game, at least the guy is he's culpable. He's admitting, like, okay, maybe I got that one wrong. What Marty Foster did, you know, and Tom talked to him as the pool reporter after the game, get the call wrong on the field. You know, ultimately you wind up ejecting Pat Murphy later in the game as a residual, you know, the holdover, carryover from that play. And then you go in and you supposedly watch the replay with your colleagues, your the rest of your crew. And then you tell Tom that, oh, yeah, we got it right. There's no doubt in my mind we got it right. I'm not an ump. I mean, those guys have forgotten more baseball than I'll ever know. But what he said was just flat out wrong, you know, when you look at the replay. And that's what makes it such a joke and so infuriating if you're a fan or you're watching the game, is like, you know, how can you say that, number one? And then number two, what's the blowback from his perspective? You know, is baseball looking at that and going, Marty, you're crazy, you got it wrong, you're gonna get fined for this, whatever? I mean, we never hear any of that stuff. We don't know, so we don't know how these guys are held accountable. And that's infuriating too. You know, like, you hear the complaints all the time about Angel Hernandez, CB Buckner. It's the same names every Joe West every year, right? I mean, it's when you know these umps' names like that, those are the guys that traditionally are the ones that are causing the problems, and it just doesn't go away. It just gets worse. So, you know, again, stuff needs to be changed. There needs to be more transparency. But you know, for whatever reason, MLB has not really acted that strongly on it yet.
Yeah, shout out to Pat Murphy, who maybe kept Craig Counsell from being the one who got ejected. Pat Murphy, one of the most entertaining, enjoyable people in the Brewers clubhouse in the last many, many years. He definitely was not having it and did get the heave from Marty Foster. Yeah, I was shocked he doubled down, Marty Foster, on that. That I just can't believe it. Yeah. I can't believe anyone could see the film and think that's actually interference. And maybe by the letter of the law, you can interpret that that's at least a call that you could make there. But, like, come on. Zach Godley just, like, shovels the ball over and walks away. I mean, was his jersey flapping in the breeze, possibly, yeah, in the way of Asan Diaz? That's just baffling to me. Baffling, but that's how Marty Foster chose to play it. Before I let you go, we can go around the horn. Anything else that jumps out at you? I mean, Travis Shaw had a great week. Devin Williams seems to be back. I think his ERA is over. I think it's like 1.29 in his last 7 outings. Anything else really jump out at you that you want to hit on?
Yeah, I mean, Devin Williams is definitely, I don't know if I'd call it a bright spot, but he's getting back on track, and that's huge for the bullpen. You know, it allows it, you know, it works from the back on down, and when you obviously have Hader in the closer spot, he's pitching well. If you can get Devin Williams settled back into that eighth inning role, it just creates so much more flexibility for Craig Counsell moving forward. And, you know, JP FireEisen has just been incredible so far. He's done everything Craig Counsell's asked of him and more. And for a young guy like that to be able to perform, being thrown into those high leverage situations the way he has been, really been remarkable. So if you can get Devin Williams locked back into that eighth inning role, I think JP has shown that he can fill that seventh inning role, and then you can do all kinds of things before them. So definite storyline there. And then the other big thing from the week is, you know, Corbin Burnes with the injured list placement. And, you know, people, it's hard to not believe that it wouldn't be COVID, you know, just based on the placement and all that stuff and the fact that the Brewers are not divulging why. All signs point to that. You know, we haven't had it confirmed or anything. But if that is the case, then, you know, number one, it seems like the Brewers would be very fortunate there weren't any contacts. No, nobody else had to be quarantined or anything like that, or you know, tested positive. And number two, how long is he going to be out? You know, from his perspective and the Brewers' perspective, you know, you would hope for a very short-term absence, and he doesn't lose much in terms of his physical conditioning and all that stuff. But, you know, what if he has some complications, and what if it takes him longer to come back? That's a real concern. And, you know, this game Sunday should have been Corbin Burnes' day. So, you know, Alec Bettinger had to kind of fall on the grenade in his place. And you would hope that that's only going to be a very short term thing, you know, having to find somebody to fill in for Corbin. But we'll see how he recovers and how fast he's able to get back into the swing of things moving forward. And, I believe he's one strikeout away from tying the record strikeouts to walks to start the season. Wouldn't that be something if he comes back and he issues a walk before he gets his next strikeout? It'd be a bummer. It's just all these little things. It's again just another malady, another injury, and what's been a really strange first month of the season for the Brewers.
Yeah, you want to respect everyone's personal decision making when it comes to the vaccine, but when you're in a clubhouse and you're a major, professional athlete, there is a risk you run. And I mean, maybe for all we know, he got the vaccine, and it's just he's one of the very rare cases of someone who got it. Even after that, I think that probably would have come to light at this point if that were the case. But there's a risk that you're taking, and it could affect your teammates if your teammates catch it too. And it's obviously nobody's fault to get the virus or whatever, but with these vaccines, I gotta think pro athletes are pretty eager to get it, and it's been made available to them. So that's tough, and it's tough to lose a guy who's obviously pitching at the peak of his powers and just dominating. Like you said, I think he's at 49 strikeouts now with no walks. That's just mind-boggling. A great start to the season, but now he joins that massive fray of players who are on the injured list, the 16 guys, and not a great week to lose Burns and Omar Narvaez in back-to-back days, basically. That's tough. Narvaez being the one guy who's really hitting the ball, and obviously Corbin Burns, a Cy Young candidate this early in the season. That's tough, but here they are, 17-11. Is it sustainable? I mean, they now have a negative one run differential, but that's because of today, and today is really difficult to weigh in that whole factor. Is this a team that, to you, looks like a team that's gonna that can win the Central Division?
Yeah, I mean, I don't long way to go, long way to go. But they have the pitching to do it, and if they can get through this run of injuries and get most of their key guys back healthy, and they start swinging it eventually, I don't see any reason why they can't compete in the division. Division's way down. The pitching across the division is not what it once was. Cubs are struggling mightily. Mm-hmm. The Pirates will fall back to earth with a huge thud here coming fairly soon, I'm fairly certain. The Cardinals are not what they've been the last few years, it doesn't look like. So I think it's up for grabs, and why not the Brewers? If you can get a full season out of Woodruff, you can get Burns back without missing much time, and he can pick up where he left off. You've got the bullpen pitching well. I think they have all the pieces, but again, five more months to go. It's a long ride. A lot of things can happen between now and then.
Brewers fans will be eager. Hopefully they do get Gelich and Kane back early in the week. He is Todd Rosiak. He's the beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. You'll find his stories this week as the Brewers go to Philadelphia, four-game series out east with the Phillies, and they'll stay on the coast, three more against the Miami Marlins before returning home to American Family Field. Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. We will chat with you again next week. Take care.